Now, normally when you hear that music, you hear the chef, but the chef's not going to be with us today. He's in the hospital right now. So wishing a big shout out to the All Marine Radio head chef to get better. And we'll carry on in his absence. Joining me from Montana, the man you know is Montana Man. Normally getting wire brushed on the show for something, but Rob Schwartz joins us from Montana. Rob, how you doing?
Good, Mac. How are you?
I'm all right. You sound like you're next door, man, honestly. Skype.
It does sound pretty good.
Yeah, I know. Skype is crazy. And everybody knows F-18, man. He was on the other day trying to give us an explanation of what fair means, but I would say that wasn't a very good explanation. But nonetheless, he's a brother, so we still love him and have him on. Kurt Knowles, call sign Rudy. Rudy, what's up?
Greetings, my friends. Greetings.
Now, just so everybody knows, the reason they're on today is that these guys are foodies, okay? Yeah, they are. They're foodies. And so whenever the chef's on, they're normally piping in about something. Ask him this. What about this? Blah, 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 blah. The, and so I thought they would be, I thought they would be great to pinch it for the chef. Rob, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, all right. General Regner just called, and I declined his call, just so you know.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's, we're on that priority.
Yeah, boom, bitches. The, sorry, Mike. carry on, devil dog. So, first of all, let's get a little background. Rudy, you're the junior guy, so you can just stand by. Rob, how did you become a foodie?
Well, I actually started cooking when I was 16 or 17 at the Rustler Steakhouse, and started out as a dishwasher. That lasted a day. Then I became the potato boy, then graduated to bread boy on day 4. And then by the next week, I was cooking steaks at Rustler Steakhouse, and then I did that through high school, different restaurants, kind of worked my way up to a 4-star place in Baltimore. And then when I was at Norwich, worked at a 4-star place in town, and then also over in Sugarbush, Vermont. And then in between college and the Marine Corps, was working at another place in Maine, just below George Bush's place in Ogunquit.
He's in Kenny Bunkport, if I recall.
Right, but I was cooking in Ogunquit.
All right. So you got into it as a job, and then got into the cooking side and kind of did that to support yourself through college.
Yep. Beer and gas money and maybe pay a little tuition with it.
There you go. Well, I know, but you're a rich kid. Were you paying tuition?
Yeah.
I mean, most Silver Spoon kids don't pay it.
Silver Spoon kids. You know, I think I paid a quarter, and then my parents paid the other the rest of it. I don't know how they split it up. They were divorced, so that was their problem.
We don't want to go there. All right.
Yeah.
Rudy, how'd you become a foodie?
Definitely family, kind of family taught, family raised with that. My great grandfather actually owned a bakery in Seattle. So that was kind of, you know, something that we had, that the recipes of that kind of passed through the generations of pie crust and things and breads and things like that. But then on my mother's side, Czechoslovakian heritage and, you know, kind of like big meaty dishes and fried chickens and that kind of stuff. So, you know, kind of taught through the family. And then, with the wife being, you know, gone so much with business, I've kind of taken the lead a lot of times on either you learn or everybody's eating out. So you go with option A for a little bit better choices. And yeah, so self-taught, but also some family heritage. So, there's been some good guidance, I would say, even from Rob, because I would say Rob's a little more polished than I am, but he's a little more professional.
Yeah,
but
he is a professional.
Even like,
you're an amateur.
You know, he's a pro. He's a pro.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I'll be like sauteing some vegetables, and then he'll be like, hey, use a cast iron for that. I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that. You know, just cast iron is a little different flavor, a little better burn. So, You know, it's wow. Nice when you're throwing some pitchers back and forth, and yeah. So.
All right, so you can see that the both of them have the background. Rudy, do you make kolaches?
No, I didn't even know what a kolache is. What is a kolache? Tell me what a kolache is.
Don't worry about it. If you don't know what it is, you said you had Czechoslovakian in your lineage. You might
yes.
You might have wanted
heavy
to look.
Heavy Czech.
Not so much. I'm thinking the okay. So let's talk about your specialties, Rob. If you were going to invite somebody over and you wanted to impress them, what do you cook?
Ooh, kind of depends who they are.
Oh, my God.
If they're, well, it does.
Well,
I mean,
what does that mean?
City like, folk. If it was you, like city folk, then it would probably be, a ribeye or the pigs I've been getting, the pork chops off those pigs have been off the chain. I mean, just amazing pork chops if you cook them right. That's always a go-to.
For city
and
folks?
Then,
what about for country folk? A little muskrat?
No, probably more of an elk steak. Elk fillet is always good.
Elk steak?
Blackened.
Elk fillet?
Medium rare.
Is that better than a ribeye? I'm struggling with that.
You know, it depends on the mood. I mean, I'm always up for a good ribeye. I mean, shit.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if it gets better than the ribeye. And I've had a lot of people drop off elk and like, oh, you gotta eat the elk. I'm like, get that shit out of here, man. Or their blood sausage and stuff like that. This is my grandma's recipe. All right. Thanks. Then throw it away. That stuff's gonna stink the whole house up.
Jack won't eat it.
I'm afraid to feed it to him. I need to kill my dog just to make somebody else happy that somebody consumed their grandma's blood sausage that smells like crap when you cook it.
God, yeah, it does.
It does. So you would. All right. What about you, Rudy? When you Rudy's a little bit more. How would I characterize it? He's a little bit more avant-garde in what he cooks. So Rudy, if you just with your repertoire, if you were gonna bring somebody over and cook for him, what would you make?
Well, if it's gonna have kind of a healthy flavor to it, I do that. Greek shrimp pasta that I did for you that one time that you came down.
Yeah, that's quality. That was quality.
Yeah. And then, but if, you know, you're a little something like kind of a colder weather day, you know what I've fallen in love with recently is my pressure cooker. So I'll do like some short ribs sauteed with some red wine and fish sauce in a pressure cooker, and you throw some vegetables in there as well.
I don't like pressure cookers. Ever since Afghanistan, I don't even like, oh, there's pressure cookers over there. Like, yeah, let's go to the other section of the store, man.
It's funny you say that. I had the sucking teeth sound because of the pressure cookers that we had in Afghanistan. I'm like, do I really even want this thing in my house? Like,
exactly.
It just feels like you're bringing a bomb in the house, you know?
Feels and, like? Hello? I was going to need a little HME and a detonator, and you're good.
Yeah. But God, it does a wonderful job on meat. I mean, it just comes out just so moist, and just literally the short ribs just fall off the bone. It's awesome. So, yeah, I think that would. Those are the two kind of right off the. Those are the big guns out of the gate.
How does a pressure cooker work?
Well, it raises the – so it obviously seals, right? So that lid comes down and actually that kind of like screws on like a pressure vessel. And then as the heating element starts to heat up and all the steam and everything stays inside, it doesn't release the steam, right? So it just – that steam that's generated from the heat and the liquid that's in – like let's say like with my short ribs I've got it usually in some soy sauce, some red wine, fish oil, and some chicken broth, or beef broth, and then as that's all that liquid heats up, it steams, but it can't release, so it actually adds to the cooking of the meat, and all that steam is in there, and it's circulating and basically injecting itself back into the meat. So you can imagine how much more moist the meat is. When all the moisture is being generated from the steam, it can't release it. And then what happens is, on the pressure cooker, it's got a valve, and depending on the recipe, some of it they want it does a slow release, where just as it gets done with its heating time, it'll actually shut off, and then it just kind of slowly dissipates the steam off. But I'm finding that most of the recipes, as the timer ends and the heating element shuts off, it actually wants you to go up and manually release the steam off. Then it's like, and then you crack that thing open and boom, you're ready. But it cooks fast too. Like you can do ribs in like 45 minutes. Like it's fast. So it's not only is you're getting much more moist, whatever fish or chicken or meat, but it also it's cooking in a fraction of the time.
Rob, are you a pressure cooker cooker?
Negative. I always try and keep water away from meat when cooking it.
Yeah, me too.
My trend. But there's been a new thing these foo-foo folks have been using, basically bringing the meat to temperature and water, vacuum sealing your meat, and Rudy will probably know what they call
it. What's that called?
Yeah, what's that called? I know exactly what you're talking about.
He's a foo-foo guy. Go ahead.
Yeah.
What is it?
I can look up right now. Actually, I was going to buy one. It's funny you guys said that. I was going to buy one because I went to a restaurant and the guy was talking about it because I was talking about pressure cooking. And Rob's right. You actually, it goes in a vacuum seal bag and you put it in water and it brings the meat up to a temperature, like let's say 120. And all you're doing is you just put it on like a hot grill for a couple of minutes. You sear each side and it comes out fantastic. Yeah, I can tell you exactly what it's called. It's not a pressure cooker. It's like a water...
sous vide.
There you go. That's
there you
it.
Go. Sousvide.
I had a steak out of one of those things, I don't know, about a month ago. And, of course, I was giving the guy shit the whole time.
Until you ate it.
Dude, I'm not going to eat boiled teeth. Yeah, no, I ate it, and it was top-notch because you pull it out of that damn bag, and then you can, put a dry rub on it, throw it on the grill, and then just sear it enough pretty hot and hard early, and then just enough to get that fat a little crispy and spread out on the meat, and then boom. I mean, it's good stuff.
So you're going to go sous vide on us?
No.
Really?
No. I don't own one. I'm still giving people crap who use it.
But if somebody puts one in front of you,
not a steak made in one.
You will consume it. I can respect that. The and so, Rudy, you're going to go buy one?
Yeah, I'm going to buy one. Because the nice thing is you can put the meat in there early. I mean, I'm not talking like, all day. The meat can just sit there and kind of wait for you. And it's in a Ziploc bag. It's not like the meat's absorbing the water. It's just bringing the meat up to a certain temperature. And it will just constantly circulate the water and just regulate the temp. And then when you're ready to cook, boom, you pull the meat out and put it in and you're ready. It's just, put it on the grill and you're done. So it's really handy. It's nice. So I think I'm going to try it.
Yeah, the chef, he was telling me about it one day and he said that he's had some really good stuff out of it too. But I just not like the pressure cooker, man. Unless EOD's around to tell me like, we're okay.
Yeah, you're all right. Go ahead.
It is a little nerve-wracking when you first fire it up because you kind of do it like with one eye closed and you're like pushing the button and you're like, is this thing going to blow up? Yeah. Like you just... The trauma we've had in Afghanistan, like, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want this thing in my kitchen. But then after I use it a few times, I'm like, it's harmless. Like, it's fine.
It's probably not going to blow up on me. The it's all right. I'll take the chance with me and my kids here in the kitchen. No problem. Just as a little bit of background, one of the ways that IEDs got set off predominantly in Afghanistan was as pressure cookers, for containing the whatever explosive they put in there, so that's what we're alluding to. All right, now you guys are familiar with the program, so if you guys were going to give everybody listening a recipe of yours, Rob, you get to start. Give everybody a recipe or something that you'd like to give everybody because it's that good.
God, the one top of my head is elk or deer chili. It's a dump recipe. I mean, I sent it to you, Mac. It's cans, seasoning, dump it. 6 hours later, come back.
Wait, so what's a dump recipe? Where you just dump things together?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically tomato sauce, tomatoes. You can put in chilies if you want. I usually do. You saute your onions up with the meat, and then chili powder. And the key, I think, is cumin. Brings it all together. And I got it on here somewhere. But that would be the go-to, because, one, it's easy, and then, two, it's good.
Easy and good. We like that.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I gave Rudy a recipe, pork chops, right, Rudy?
I just ate it a couple days ago. As a matter of fact, it's earned leftovers in the fridge right now. So
Rudy loves it because it is easy. And,
although I'm glad you brought it up, because for some reason I keep feeling like it's coming out drier than the first time that I made it, and I'm wondering if I'm missing a step or something.
No.
Can you walk through the step again?
You're overcooking it. Now, I would give you one of two things. If you're not going to use a digital meat thermometer, then I would tell you that you should very, very lightly brown, and you might want to experiment with not even browning at all.
Maybe I should try that, because I think I might be browning it too long. But I'll tell you what, the thing that I do that's different than you is I saute onions and mushrooms, which I think tastes fantastic with
it.
But that is an easy one, man. It is King Kong.
That's another
King Kong
dump recipe, which is condensed milk, cream of mushroom soup. You know, you brown or not. You're supposed to brown the pork chops and season them just a little bit so it has that seasoning on the skin. And then you just let them saute for, again, that's the art of it. Depending on your stove and if you're going to do that at, like, that low temperature, it might be 45 minutes. It might be 30 minutes.
I probably should take the temperature. I'm using, like, a standalone, like, fryer, you know what I mean, like an electric fryer, and I just put it on simmer.
Right.
And then I wonder if it's getting the meat too warm. But
yep,
now, that one's easy, so... Just to walk through to listeners, all you do is sear up, just kiss each side of a pork chop, and I usually put four to six in there, depending on how many I've eaten. And then, like Max said, season them on both sides. And then what I do, I ad lib a little bit than what Mac does. I take them out, and then I pour in a cup of chopped mushrooms and a cup of chopped onion, and I saute that for a little bit. And then maybe 5 minutes, and then I push those to the side, and I put the pork chops back in there. And usually, if they're sitting on a plate, they'll have been kind of oozing out their juices. So you make sure to pour those juices in the pan as well. And then here's the curveballs on it all: you pour over the top cream of mushroom soup, a can of that, and then a can, which no one can believe, a can of condensed milk, which is tough to find if you've never shopped for it. But it's actually in like dessert. Baking area of a grocery store. And then, like Max said, you throw it on there and then you cover it. And I don't know, most of the time I've been cooking it about 45 minutes, but maybe I should take the internal temp a little better. They're just turning out a little bit too dry, but
right.
God, it's good. I mean, literally, people are like, what is this sauce? And you're like,
no, if you make it with potatoes. Condensed
milk and cream of mushroom.
Right. If you make it with mashed potatoes, the gravy is to die for. It's normally pork chop, mashed potatoes, and gravy and peas. And our kids will request that for their birthday. Yeah, no shit. That ghetto ass recipe, but they love it and it tastes delicious. And I've got to try it with the fresh onions and mushrooms in it. Only make it taste better. Okay, so that's my recipe. Rudy, give us the recipe from the Knowles family or whatever you want to give us.
Okay.
Well, you can do
the Greek pasta with shrimp, which is, I can go right down, you know, everything. So you basically, you're getting about a pound and a half of raw, medium-sized shrimp.
What is this?
This is the Greek pasta, pasta.
All right.
So Greek pasta with shrimp. So you're looking at about a pound and a half of raw, medium-sized shrimp. And then what you do is make sure you got feta cheese is very important. You got to get crumbled feta cheese, Rotel tomatoes, can of those, some lemon juice, some fresh parsley, fresh oregano, And then pasta is your choice. I use either, I like spinach pasta. Some people just like straight up angel hair, but really over to you on that.
What's spinach pasta?
It's pasta that's made out of a spinach, right? It's really good. It's really good.
I didn't even know there was such a thing. Rob, did you know about that?
Oh yeah, used to make it by hand.
It's excellent, and I think it's much better for you. You know, you don't feel so bloated like when you eat this regular straight up angel hair.
Yeah, no. Popeye eats a lot of spinach.
Yeah, and then artichoke hearts, a can of those. Then all you do, this is so easy. So then you just heat the oil up and just add some garlic in there, like a tablespoon of garlic. Saute the shrimp in the garlic. And then it's kind of like Ross, it's like a dump recipe. You just start dumping stuff in there. So you dump in the artichoke hearts, you dump in the feta, you dump in the Rotel tomatoes, you just kind of spray over about maybe a tablespoon of lemon juice over the top, and then you just start just letting it just saute, and you're just basically making this sauce that's got the feta cheese in there and the artichokes. And what I do is I like it a little more saucy, so when I pour in the artichoke hearts in the can, I actually let the liquid that was in the can go in there too to get it to be a little bit more kind of a saucy. But if you didn't want to do it and you wanted it more chunky, I'd just take the artichoke hearts out of the can. And then you just saute it up for about 20 minutes. And what's nice is while the kind of that, you know, contraption's all cooking together, then you throw your pasta in, and because each one takes about 15, 20 minutes. So you're kind of simultaneously sauteing all that together in one big pan while you're cooking your pasta in the pot. And then about 30 minutes later, you're ready to eat. So it's easy. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. Sprinkle a little, you know, parsley over the top of it when it comes out, a little bit of oregano as well for some seasoning, and yeah, you're in there.
What do you serve that with?
Well, what I typically, you know, some type of vegetable typically, you know, so like a broccoli or an asparagus, something like that off the side. So I like grilled asparagus, but the kids seem to like steamed broccoli a little bit better, so we've got one or the other, something like that.
Got it. All right, Rob, any thoughts on that dish? Would you eat it?
I'd try it. It sounds a little fruity to me, but, you know, anything with artichokes in it.
You like artichoke?
Not really a fan.
Really?
I mean,
I love artichokes just as like an appetizer. That's, oh, man, that's the best. And then what I grew up eating it with butter, you know, like melted butter. But recently, over the last probably 10 years, I've gotten into mayonnaise and dill. So what you do is just blend up some dill in like a little food processor and then pour that in a cup of mayonnaise and mix it together. Oh, man, you dip artichoke leaves in that. Oh, God, man, that is the appetizer right there.
Wow. Yeah, you guys thought I was kidding about these guys being foodies. all right, where do you go to, next question. Where do you guys go? I mean, there's a ton of food programs on. Do you guys watch any of that, Rob?
No, none, but I probably haven't turned a TV on in a week either, well, so I seldom watch TV.
Yeah, now that the Red Sox are getting shit kicked all over the place.
Yeah.
We said
we weren't going to talk about baseball when we're doing.
Do you want to talk about Antonio Brown and your Patriots?
Oh, for shit's sake, I didn't know you were going to bring that up either.
All right,
what a shit show that is, man. Even my wife knows about it.
Today?
She's like,
I
what's up this Antonio Brown guy? I'm like, God.
Wait, hold on. There's breaking news, Rudy?
Yeah, Antonio Brown got slapped with a sexual assault charge from Tuesday or something like that. Like, it just came out. It was on ESPN.
Yeah, that was yesterday. Day old, bro.
The only consolation I take in that is Bill Belichick brought on Randy Moss, too, and was able to get him down the straight and narrow for a season anyway.
Right. You know what? I don't know that you could change the spots on the leopard, though. You know, Josh Gordon, you know, God bless him, he struggles with addiction or whatever his issue is. You know, he's been on, how many times has he been suspended from the Patriots? I don't know, like every time after they got him. So, you know, when you heard, like, I just read an article that had, like, the text of what John Gruden was saying. Hey, man, do you want to play? Do you want to be a Raider? And he said, look, it's not just about football. I'm more than a football player. And I thought, when I read that, I thought, when he says that, I'm out. Me and my $30 million, we're out. But he'll be okay as long as he doesn't fuck with Giselle, right? Giselle, Tom Brady's wife. If he gets on her bad side, her and her, like, 90 billion followers, yeah, they'll run him straight out of the country. So just
I think Ron's dead on is if anyone can keep him in check, it's Bill Belichick. You know what I mean? Like, otherwise, I don't know he would work on any other team. So.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, there you go. That's your New England sports update. And that's really why Rob has not been here at television. All right. Let's talk about so, Rob, there's a shit ton of food shows on. And you're like a legitimate, like, semi-professional foodie dude. Nothing.
No. I don't. I mean, because a lot of them are those competitions and Iron Chef and those kind of things. Mm-hmm.
Anthony Bourdain, when he was alive?
No, maybe a little bit, you know, here and there.
So if you'd be channel surfing, you'd go by and they'd be talking food, you might linger.
Just a bit, to see what they were doing. But, I mean, he'd be in places like Thailand eating octopus, and I've tried that, and I freaking yacked for, like, 2 days.
You
like,
did?
I don't need to see that.
Yeah. I didn't try that in Thailand. I did get involved in
it. You see, like, needles, like, floating in the water on the beach out there. Like, that's the nasty water.
I did get involved with a boa constrictor at about 3 in the morning. But, he was medicated, mercifully. The story goes, I mean, so I have this picture of me with this boa constrictor on my shoulders, drunk at 3 in the morning, right? It's in our house. I go to read to Catherine's kindergarten class. I walk in, and they start yelling, snake man, snake man, snake man. And I look at the teacher, and I'm like, what are they saying? They're like, well, they're calling you snake man. I'm like, why would they say that? And she goes, oh, this picture. And I look like, I'm like drunk with this boat. I'm like, who the fuck thought this was a good idea? Yeah, sure, Catherine, take this picture of your dad. So I went home that night. I'm like, what's going on with the program right here? All right, what are we doing? I'm like, oh,
the inner circle stuff.
Exactly. What about you? Yeah, what about Thailand? Yeah. Thailand, I'll tell you what, if you want to go to a fun place, though, kickboxing with strippers in the same bar?
Yeah.
Come on.
You'll lose your soul in Thailand. Like, it's crazy.
Could it get better than that? I'm not sure it can, right? Your head on a swivel, shit happening everywhere, Marines from, like, Des Moines, Iowa losing their minds, and all kinds of good stuff. So, what about
Thailand's
you?
Always, when you go to Thailand, it's like work hard, play hard. Like, you kind of like, you're partying so hard there, and you're like, oh, God, we got to get up in the morning to work. Like,
we don't. Well, see, that's an aviator perspective. When we work, we're nowhere near partying. You can't get it confused. So when we take it off, it comes off. What about you? Do you watch any TV food shows?
You know, I love, Diners, Dives, and Drive-Ins, whatever. I'll watch that, but that's about it. You know, nothing like educationally, you know. I do, if I'm looking for something, like, I'll Google Emeril, like Emeril's jambalaya or something. You know what I mean? Like, and then I'll take a look at how he does it. Like, that's probably the, as far as, like, following somebody on, as far as a mentor or a cooking show, is probably, I'll just Google Emeril stuff. But that's about it. No, I don't really watch much.
Wow. Wow.
So,
all right, give me.
I watch more car shows.
All right, we're going to stay away from the car stuff, okay? Unless you guys lose your shit on
me. Rob probably goes to the hunting channel, so, outdoor, Bass Pro Shop stuff. So.
Well, we'll find out. Give me a grilling tip, Rob. First of all, what kind of grill do you have? Tell us about your setup and give us a grilling tip. He's muted himself. He doesn't know it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
This is awesome.
Is he still on? He's still on?
I'm going.
See, I told you.
I did mute myself.
I did. Look, I know, how do I know this shit? Right?
This is the new rig.
And he's sitting there talking to himself, and he doesn't know that nobody could hear him. All right, so give us a grilling tip.
Well, setup is a Weber grill, 5-burner, so it's the bigger one. I think those grills last better. They, you know, perform well longer, and you can usually get parts for them.
What do you mean, the bigger one?
So I like that, the bigger ones.
Wow.
Five
burners, well, so that means, so if I'm standing there, there's 5 vertical sets of burners across this grill. How many feet wide?
I don't know, 3.5, 4.
Oh, that's it?
3.5. It's pretty big. Yeah, 5 knobs on it, and then a chili burner on the side.
Got it.
That's the propane rig, and then my smoking slash, if you want to cook over, you know, fresh wood, mesquite, something like that, I got one of the big barrel smokers with a firebox on the bottom or off to the side, and I'll often just cook on that if I'm cooking for, like you were saying, if, you know, we're having company over, I'd probably fire that thing up and then smoke some cheese in the smoker while I'm cooking, you know, steaks over mesquite. That's kind of my setup. I like to work on that smoker. The problem is, as I got older, the heartburn started pushing me away from it.
Really? The heartburn caused by just the smoke?
Just the smoke, yeah. I mean, we used to smoke. On Sundays, I'd usually do 2 or 3 chickens, a rack or 2 of ribs, and then a pork tenderloin maybe, or 2, because those are cheap and they're really good. And then just eat that through the week. You know, Alicia would take the chicken and put it on salads and or put it in sandwiches for lunch, that kind of stuff. And then you've got all week either you're having ribs or pork tenderloin.
Wow, that's a big business. All right, so give us one grilling tip that, you know, as you grill, being a professional, a semi-professional, give us one grilling tip.
Always hot early, and then slow throughout, and then take it off a little sooner than you think you should, and wrap it in foil, let it rest, and let those juices come back to the surface.
No,
That's for red meat and pork.
I fought that for so many years. The one thing that you say that, you know, I would, and the chef kind of taught me this, but, you know, if you want it medium rare, you got to take it off when it's rare because it will continue to cook. And I was thinking, Rudy, that might be your problem because those pork chops, when you take them out and put them aside, they're still cooking.
Yeah, right? They're still hot. They are.
Yeah. So that's cook time. Mm-hmm. And maybe one of the reasons, you know, if that takes 10 minutes, then you're overcooking it by 10 minutes because the pork chops are cooked. But, I honestly was a little bit embarrassed, because I had to fess up when I said, yeah, I wrapped the steaks in foil and let them sit for 10 minutes and I bought good steak and that shit was awesome. But the art is taking them off early, knowing that in the 10 minutes they're sitting in the foil, they will graduate 1 cooking calibration, whatever that means. So if you wanted medium rare, you take them off when it's rare, and they'll go to medium rare in the foil. And as Rob said, the juice is set. I mean, that is pretty. It's pretty amazing, honestly.
And on pork chops, don't. I mean, everybody gets all scared of, you know, pork chops having pink in them.
Right.
Or pork, period. Pork should have a little bit, it should be medium looking, you know. It should have a little bit of pink there still in it. Because, I mean, that's the worst thing ever is a freaking overcooked pork chop,
oh,
man. It's like freaking shoe leather.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's terrified. Oh, we don't undercook that. I'm like, yeah, look.
You're going to get salmonella. No, you're thinking of chicken. Let it go.
All right, Rudy, you got any grilling
Well, my setup is very similar to Rob's. So Genesis Weber Genesis 3-burner So not quite the five, but a three burner. I'm on my second one. I love them.
Little guy.
And then my smoker, I use an Orion, which I love, but and it's kind of got a convection oven style. So you do put wood chips in with the meat. It's great with turkey. You can do a full turkey in like, no kidding, 2 hours. And then on the outside, it's got a tray of briquettes. And then on the top of the chimney, you put briquettes. And it has to be the Instalite type of briquettes because they need to burn very quickly and get up to a uniform temp. But that's fine because you're not worried about the flavor of those briquettes. You know, everyone does a sucking teeth sound about you're going to taste the lighter fluid. It's like they're not even touching anywhere near the meat because it's a convection oven that's all of the briquettes are on the outside of the convection oven and the smoker. The wood's what's on the inside. So
what is this rig called?
That's my Orion, the Orion smoker. And they're only like $100. They're cheap. But you can do a turkey in 2 hours tops. I mean, hour 45. And I'm talking like a 15-pound turkey. So they're really, really neat. Orion, the Orion smoker. Ribs. I love every Thanksgiving that's in Christmas. That's the turkey tool. And then of course, you know, the thing about with turkey is you got to put it in a brine for a couple days prior. And the brine's and I do an apple brine where I get a 5-gallon bucket, stick the turkey in there. But I've already mixed all the brine up before I put the turkey in, and it's apple juice and oranges and apples all sliced up, handful of garlic, and then stick that turkey in that 5-gallon bucket, put in the fridge for about 2 days, and then when it comes out, you put it in that Orion smoker, and you got apple smoked.
It looks like a pressure cooker itself.
Yeah, it does. I know. It works great. It really, really works great. Everything's turned out fantastic in it. The hard thing about that is it's kind of like a pressure cooker. Like, you fire it off, and then you got to just kind of trust the time. Like, you can't crack the seal and check it. Like, it's got to just sit in there and just work its magic, and then when the timer's up, you open it up and it's kind of like opening up the Christmas gift. Like, oh, hopefully this turned out. So
yeah, I don't like that. Hey, hope's not a COA, especially in cooking. Okay, nobody wants to eat anybody's hope with a lot of ketchup and cream of mushroom gravy on it. Okay.
Well, I've had great results with it, so I'm telling you, you should try it. My smoker.
Wait a minute. So you both have smokers. So if you were cooking ribeyes, Rob, if you're cooking a ribeye, you just go straight on the grill, or do you flip it over to the smoker, or do you use both apparatus?
No, if I'm trying to impress somebody, I'll bust out some fresh mesquite, and that firebox on the smoker is basically just a big fire pit,
right,
with a grate on it. So make a nice bed of mesquite coals in there, and then throw your ribeye on that. Get a little bit of that smoke wood flavor into your steak. But day to day, if I got steaks thawed out in the fridge and it's a dinner at night, usually I'm just using the regular grill.
Got it. Rudy, how about you?
For ribeye would be just on the Weber. But I agree with you guys 100%. Is hot early, kiss the sides, move it to like a low medium heat, and then take it off early, or else you're just going to, you know, might as well turn it into beef jerky. So, that's the key. That is the key. Get it off early and wrap it. Here's one thing I'd be interested in your guys' thoughts on. I season when I'm searing, right? Now, some people say don't season that early because there's like a rule of thumb that the salt and the seasoning kind of dries out the meat. When do you guys season the steak?
That's my number one song.
I feel like I'm getting our comms being interrupted.
Yeah. I think he's calling to tell me that he's...
I didn't know if that was me.
No. That's not you again. I know you've screwed it up already, but no, I think he's going to become a member of the 2nd Marine Division.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
DJ Furness is going to be doing the welcome aboard.
Yeah, and the relief. Would I say that shit?
Don't roll a 7 on the craft table.
Exactly, it did go through my mind. I actually his monitors help I mean, he's a relatively senior captain. And, you know, the guy called him and said, I know you'd rather go to the West Coast, but for your career, this will be better. You'll be in command longer, and they're the only ones really that line up with you and where you're at. So, I mean, pretty cool. But, so anyway, I think, I don't know if that's...
Got great on-base housing. The offshore housing is probably second to none on Camp Lejeune. I mean, that place is... those offshore housing is amazing.
That was before the hurricane rolled through there a year ago.
Oh, yeah. Dr. General Furness, did he...
Not sure that you've read about that, but they've got some issues there now. You know what? I season throughout. I would have to talk to Kim. The only thing I've ever heard Kim say, you know, is don't sauce early because the sugar in the sauce is what creates the black chicken that we grew up eating.
Yeah, I know. I've heard that too. Yeah. I know.
But in terms of other seasoning, I've never heard him say, yeah, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. Yeah, I don't know. Rob?
If I'm dry rubbing or marinating, always do it the day before and leave it in the fridge and then bring your meat out and bring it to room temp before you're grilling.
That's a varsity move right there. Yeah. Yeah, the room temp before you grill. That's
so,
a varsity play.
So marinating is not, we're not talking about saucing, right? It's just going to be, the meat's going to be marinated, it'll go through, blah, 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 blah. Yay?
Yay. You know, garlic, sesame oil, and either Worcestershire or soy is kind of the marinade I like to go with. And then whatever dry rub you're putting on there, put that a little bit in it and baggy it up, get all the air out, and throw it in the fridge overnight.
Well, I'll say as a connoisseur of both your guys's, you know, grilling, You both know how to grill steaks. Like, I mean, Rob's was fantastic. And then, Mac, you got the egg. Yours turned out awesome. Like, I mean, you guys know what you're talking about with steaks. Like,
I'm kind of groping in it. Let me tell you, without the digital meat thermometer, I'm swagging like most people. You know, the digital meat thermometer takes the art. It all becomes science, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It makes it unfuckable. You cannot fuck this thing up, okay? So that's why I bought one, and it changed my life, okay?
Don't you have, like, the Bluetooth or something? Like, it's wireless?
Yeah, Bluetooth, baby. The it's a Weber device, and so you download the Weber app, and then it says, what are you cooking? Well, what temperature? Do you want to do the grill temperature, or do you want to do a food temperature? Food temperature. What are you cooking? Red meat. What kind of red meat? Ribeye steaks. How do you want them done? I want them done medium rare, so tell me when it's rare. And then, you put the digital meat thermometer in, and, again, sear on both sides and move it to indirect heat, and you can't, it's impossible to screw it up.
How does the thermometer sit in there? Just once you go to indirect heat, then you just stick it inside of, like, their... one of the smaller ones, or which one do you usually pick to which one that goes in?
I normally pick the smaller one because that will tell you, right, you know, it's going to cook the quickest.
You don't want that one to overcook.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah, and once I know that once I take that off, I'll put it in the larger steak, and then but they have, you're a big timer, Rudy, you're tuned up, and so they have, I mean, come on, I mean, be honest, you're rich. So,
I don't know about rich.
Stop. Don't make us do this in public. Okay? But you can buy them that has like five different probes on them. So you can have one in every steak.
Mm.
So for a guy like you.
Jesus.
Exactly. Yeah, then it's like if you have four steaks, you only have the thermometer in one. You know, that's the one you're eating, right? And then everybody else gets a relative swag. It's not much of a swag. It'll still be good, but you're not sure. So that's why you eat the one that you know is great. But for you, Rudy, you could get one with like four or five probes in it, and that's
I got a birthday coming up. That might be a birthday request.
And it's not that. I mean, it's under $100.
Oh, wow, that's not bad.
Yeah, no. It's a great Father's Day or birthday gift because it's cheap. My kids were all over it. They're like, Dad, what do you want for, I think it was Father's Day. I want a digital meat thermometer. Patrick, like, goes on his phone. He's like, that's good. I'm like,
that's approved.
I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, it's $39, bro. He said, divided by three, I'm all over that.
Colleen can even afford that.
What a piece of shit. Yeah. He's like, what? It's what you said you wanted. We're just trying to make you happy. I'm like, talk to the hand. All right, favorite rubs or sauce that you use that you tell people, hey, if I was you, I would use this. Rob?
Ooh, type, as in brand, or...
Whatever you got.
Shit, I'm going to have to go look.
What's the flavor?
Go-to for anything is a mesquite rub. God, and it's a little company out of San Antonio that makes it. And it's salt-free, which is a big deal, because most of those rubs are like 90% salt. So if I'm going to put on anything on, if I'm going to rub anything on, I want it to have no salt on it, because the salt is, that's one of your biggest variables that you can control on your own,
right.
You know, just putting straight salt on. So whatever rub I'm putting on, I just want no salt in it, and then I can either put a little or a lot of salt or none is usually what I do on my meat, because most of those rubs out of the can are, you know, whatever. That's the first ingredient on them is salt. So a non-salt mesquite rub is kind of the go-to.
Wow. No, I will tell you this. I think a common mistake in seasoning is too much salt.
Yes.
Especially on a steak, especially on like a ribeye that has the fat and, you know, and which is why I think people tend to like them, but there's a fair enough amount of salt in that to begin with. You don't need a whole lot more. Rudy, how about you? Rub?
Cindy likes the taste of Lowry's, so we tend to just sprinkle Lowry's
what?
And a little bit of garlic salt.
That's kind of ghetto.
I know. She's simple. She just likes Lowry's over her, you know, and she knows if the Lowry's isn't on her ribeyes, she knows.
She fires the plate against the wall and says, how many times do I have to tell you? It's Lowry's?
Lowry's. Lowry's seasoning sprinkled over ribeyes with a sprinkle of garlic salt. That is like how Cindy likes it. She gets 51% voting authority in the house. That's how we cook the steaks. So, and it's got to be bloody. They got to be pink in the middle. If they're even a hint of medium, I get wire brushed about how I overcooked the steaks.
Again.
So, yeah.
The chef, he's a salt and pepper guy.
Really?
Yeah, he's a kosher salt and pepper guy. And a little
that's
kosher,
not a bad option either.
Yeah, little kosher salt when you with the olive oil when you rub the ribeye down, and then a little pepper, and then other than that, season to taste. And one of his pet peeves is when you salt your food before you taste it. He just stares at you like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Salting my food? Why? You haven't taken a bite yet, stupid." Like, did you just call me stupid? Yeah. Why would you salt before you taste it? Like, I don't know. That's the way I do it. So, yeah.
Because you're stupid.
Well, that's what he would say.
I was muted. Sorry.
I thought I was... That's one of my favorites. I thought... Did I say that out loud? I thought I was thinking that. The,
Boner's Fiesta brand is is the actual brand I go with, and I just order them online in bulk.
What's the name of it again?
Bollner's Fiesta brand, Bollner's Fiesta brand.
All right, Bollner, Bollner's Fiesta brand. All right, and you can find it online. And you just go.
Yep, that's the way I order it.
And you just go straight. What flavor? Mesquite.
Either the mesquite or the brisket rub is also salt-free. And I use it on everything.
You know who's a big fan
not,
of the... You
not
know
just brisket.
You know who's a big fan of the brisket?
I thought everyone was.
The big cat.
I thought so.
Yeah,
he loves that.
And sausage gravy on it, probably.
from Cracker Barrel. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Napa
brisket,
Man...
Smoking a brisket on a regular standard... old school smoker is it's an art that I don't think I've mastered yet, but coming along. You know, that's the main thing when you go to a barbecue competition. Everybody's wanting to know how your brisket is, because I think that's the hardest thing to do in a smoker.
Brisket. I'm not a brisket cooker, so I don't know. We went down to Napa Man's house to have steaks one night, Colleen and I, and I mean these are like Fred Flintstone like brontosaurus steaks, right? So Colleen is standing there, and he's got two little girls, right? And Colleen looks and goes, wow, those steaks are really big. And they both look at her and they say, yeah, my dad likes steaks. And Colleen says, really? And they said, yeah, this is the third time this week we've had them.
Holy shit.
But
he needs his protein.
What's that?
He needs his protein.
Oh, yeah. He'll die without it. Are you kidding me? But Napa Man loves food like not too many people I know. I mean, I read...
And you can tell because he doesn't have a friggin' neck.
Exactly. I remember, easy, he gets censored about being a fat guy.
I know he does. Neckless wonder.
The
big cat.
You know what? Speaking of the big cat, he told me the funniest story. So we refer to him as Napa Man, but he has a real identity. He's a real human being. And so he's in the gym at San Mateo. And a former Marine, who's now an Orange County Sheriff, is there that used to serve with him. And he comes over, he goes, hey, man, what's up? And Napa Man's like, he's like, hey, how's it going? And so they're talking, and he looks Napa Man in the face. He said, you're Napa Man, aren't you?
You've been busted.
his cover totally blown. He went, he said, I am. He said, oh, man, I roll when they start wire brushing your ass. He said, I know. They're not very kind to me on that radio program. He said, oh, I think it's hilarious. But Napa
They're
Man.
Not kind to anybody on that radio program.
You know what? That's the truth. That's the truth. But we do it out of affection, which it's kind of like saying it's a dry 120. Napa Man, I think, Rob, you had already left, but he left. Did you leave before or after Napa Man? You left after Napa.
It was right about the same time.
Right. You left in the spring. Well, he wrote back an email that I read to everybody in the COC. He had dinner, and then he went down. He and his wife walked to the other family's house. So they're both from Napa. They were at one house. They went to the other. And he had cereal with whole milk. And he wrote an entire email about it. And it was one of the funniest things I've ever read. First of all, he described his full dinner that he ate. And then he described walking through, you know, Napa. And then he gets to his in-law's house. And he's hungry again. So he's going to have cereal with whole milk. You know, Mac.
Not the 2% shit.
Exactly. Mac, when was the last time you had cereal with whole milk? I'm not exactly sure. Well, and then he went on for like four paragraphs about the wonder of how good cereal tasted with whole milk. So, but Napa Man, he's a steak guy. I'm pretty sure he's a big brisket guy. But his grill, I don't know that he has a smoker. I think he just has like the big kind of Weber production that Rob kind of has. I think he doesn't have a little guy like you, Rudy. He doesn't have just like three. I think he's got like
three.
I think he's got full on five.
Yeah, with the size of steaks he's cooking.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Rudy, when are you coming out this way again?
I know I need to. I'm hoping that Delta starts flying out to Bozeman in this plane soon. There's talks. So, yeah, hopefully soon. How much are you going to be there before you head back down to the other place?
December of 2020 is what we've discussed from the onset, so we'll kind of see how it
goes.
No,
he means back to Idaho, or do you mean permanent relocation, Rudy?
Well, both.
No, back to Idaho.
Oh, back to Idaho. What, so can you explain the whole farrier operation?
Blacksmith/horseshoer.
So like when we see movies like Paint Your Wagon, and you got the big fat guy, the blacksmith is always a fat guy with a beard, got really hairy arms, and there's a kind of a hooded thing, and he's blowing stuff into the coals. That guy, that's you?
Well, that's part of it. That's how you heat your steel up.
Right.
And then my rig is obviously not like that. We've graduated past coal, and that's hard to get around in your truck. So I got a propane forge.
So you take it, and then you go. How is the horseshoeing business? Good?
Yeah, it's too busy right now. But it's kind of, I mean, when I came over here to Montana, I basically cut my client book in half. And then I go back once a month, and I brought a guy on to apprentice for me. And so I got a week's worth of shoeing a month, and it's a nonstop, depending on the time of year. 7 a.m. till 1 p.m, and then by that point you're pretty crippled up and you need to go lay down for about half an hour.
Is it hard work?
Oh, for shit's sake. Yeah, it's brutal.
In the movies, in the movies, it doesn't look really hard. I mean, they just pick the hoof up, they put a new shoe on it, bang, 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 boom, done.
Right, and then do that, you know, 16 to 20 times a day. I mean, that foot comes up off the ground and in between your legs, gets cleaned, trimmed, rasped out, then out from between your legs, brought forward, rasped down on the top, and then one more check of it, and then you've got to go build your shoe. So then you're back in the forge with your steel shaping your shoe to the foot. Then you got to go back to the foot.
How do you know what shape? How do you know how to shape? You're like a horse manicurist. Pedicurist.
Well, yeah, if you want to call it that, sure.
Well, that's kind of what. So how do you shape the? How do you know what shape to put the shoe in?
Well, basically, you're looking at the horse's anatomy. So you're judging your dorsal palmar angle, which is the front of the foot to the heel,
right,
and then your medial lateral angle, which is your side to side on the foot, and then you get your trim.
Are you eye fucking it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can measure across the widest point of the foot and then from a heel to the toe if you really want to, but normally I'll just take my shoe that's not shaped yet, bring it over and slap it on the foot, and then just make my throw it back in the forge, make modifications to it, and then usually I am close enough at that point to bring it back to the horse and burn it on.
What do you mean burn it on? I thought you nailed it on.
Well, you burn it on first.
Well, how does that work? I didn't know.
Well, it comes out of a forge at about 1,200 degrees. You don't burn it on at that temp. Usually somewhere around 400-500 degrees you want your shoe at.
So you melt it on, you melt it onto the toenail?
Yeah, you basically burn it on there so your shoe exactly matches the foot it's going on.
Ah.
And burning the shoe on does a bunch of different things to it. It helps retain water in the foot. It tells me if I've got any sole pressure, which will lame a horse within a day.
Right.
And you can only get a foot so flat when you're upside down with a rasp. But I can stare at the top of a horseshoe with it in my hands and make sure that's really dang flat. So I know when I burn that thing on, one, it fits perfect, and two, it's flat. And then you go back, quench it, and then you're going to come back, and that's when you nail it up.
Well, how about that?
Then you've got to clench it, too. So now it's just 1 foot you're talking about. All those things got to happen to just 1 foot.
What does it mean, clench it? What is that?
Nails go in, and then they come out of the foot. You bend them over, and you cut them off. And then you've got to take out – you basically are bending them over so they stay on.
Right.
But that process, you've got to gouge a little piece out of the hoof so that piece of nail has somewhere to go into. And then you're clenching it down in there nice and snug. Because they're not like the nails you drive into your wall where they're just meant to – you know, stay in. What holds them on is that clinch that's bent over on the inside of the foot.
Wow. Rudy, did you know any of that? You're a fighter pilot.
Well, when I was up with Rob last summer, he kind of went through it all, and I was just, like, fascinated with how complex it was. And I didn't, I don't know, what is that? One horse is, like, 15, 20 minutes, right? It's, like, pretty long. It's, like, it's... It's not like they're going
one
through
horse
all the horses.
On a good day, for a full set of shoes and one horse, if you're good, an hour.
Yeah. Each foot's like a 15 minutes. Yeah, that's what he was saying.
Yeah, and you do it in pairs. So normally you can do fronts and then hinds, or hinds and then fronts. But, yeah, it's an hour if you're decent. It can be longer if you're not.
Wow. Wow. Rudy, you got anything like that in your personal life? You got the... You're just now...
No,
that's
an art form and a skill, which is why he gets paid so much money to do that.
He's an artist. Yeah, he's a horseshoe artist. What about... how's the commercial aviation gig going? Are you...
Good. Delta's great. Yeah, heading to New York this weekend, and going to be flying around the country next week. No, I think life's good. Life's real good.
All right. Well, first of all...
Do you have a standard route? Do they give you, like, a standard route? Or you just
In this plane, the Airbus 220, Delta's primarily flying them like New York down to Dallas or New York to Houston, and then they're going up to Salt Lake, up to
Seattle.
Oh, shit,
I might see you then, because that's where I go out of Salt Lake down to Houston or San Antonio when I'm going to Texas to hunt.
Oh, and do you fly Delta?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, that's my route. No, that'd be great. Let me know. Well, that'd be a blast, because I know sometimes I get a layover in Houston. That'd be a blast.
You sit up front in the jump seat, and they'll give you a set of wings.
Yeah, I get those little plastic wings.
Yeah, they'll give you
that to the kids.
Yeah, they'll give you a set of wings, Tiger.
And a lollipop.
All right, boys. Well, first of all, I appreciate you pinch hitting for the chef. I know you guys are both food guys, and I appreciate you coming on and servicing the food target here on Friday. So,
well, best wishes to the chef. I know it's
yeah.
Hope his voice is a staple to All Marine Radio. Hopefully, everything works out.
Yeah. No, you know what? He sounded really good. I talked to him yesterday. He sounded really good. He called me up. He was, you know, he loves doing the radio show, so he was not happy that he couldn't do it, but he said I gotta get better here before I can come back on. So, and I think his wife was staring at him when he made the phone call. So he was moderately uncomfortable. He was getting the he was getting the stink eye when he did it.
Yeah, we all know that eye.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Mm-hmm. All right, boys. Thanks for the visit.
All right, I'll talk
to you
later.
All right, man. We'll see you.
There you have it.
Bye,
that is Rudy. Call sign and named Kurt Knowles and Montana Man, Rob Schwartz. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.